Welcome to episode 5 of Popcorn and Prosecco, where we talk about as many movies as we possibly can squeeze into this 30-minute show. This week, we're going to cover Bad Words, Veronica Mars, and South by Southwest. I'm Perry Nemiroff, and here is my co-host, Angie Han.
Hello, world.
So Christy is off on an Ireland adventure this week, but we will have her back next week. But for now, we're just going to jump right into our topics. Angie, you want to take it for Bad Words?
Sure. So the first thing we're going to talk about today is Bad Words, which is the directorial debut of Jason Bateman. And it's, I mean, most people have described it as like, you know, Spellbound meets Bad Santa, and that's a pretty apt description. It's about Jason Bateman also plays the lead character, and he's this like 40-year-old who's just really like misanthropic and bitter and awful, and he enters a spelling bee for children, for like middle schoolers or something, or elementary school kids, somewhere in that range, and needless to say, parents and the people who run the spelling bee are not happy about it. It's not revealed until a little bit later in the movie why he's doing it. But anyway, so while he's there, he befriends a little boy, I don't remember his name offhand. I'll have to look it up. But he befriends this little boy, and that's like a whole thing. So as you can see, basically it is Bad Santa at a spelling bee. So I saw it last night, and I thought it was pretty good, not great. It's one of those movies that tries to have like really edgy humor and tries to be like really dark and twisted. Since it's impossible not to compare it to Bad Santa, I will say I don't think it is quite as good as that. But it's a really good outing for a first-time director, and I think that Jason Bateman is really good in it. It turns out that Jason Bateman, the director, knows exactly what to do with Jason Bateman, the actor. It's a really good role for him, and I feel like he's always been really good at playing assholes, even when he seems like he's playing a nice guy. Like in Arrested Development, at first you think, oh, he's the good guy, and then the more you get to know Michael Bluth, the more you're like, this guy's actually as fucked up as the rest of them. You know, and then he did, like, a similar thing in Juno, and then Horrible Bosses, he's a guy trying to kill his boss. Like, I feel like people think that he's, like, the nice guy type, but he always has, like, a weird, like, assholiness to him, and this movie makes really good use of that. And by the way, I'm not saying he's an asshole in real life, I have no idea, but anyway, so Perry, what did you think?
Yeah, I'm kind of, like, in the same range as you are. I'd probably give it a just barely positive review. I like the core concept. I think that works all the way through. It is fun watching this grown man compete against children. I mean, they're all 10 and 11 years old, and he's kind of stomping all over their dreams, and that's kind of funny. A lot of the jokes in it are kind of funny. But I think what hurts this one more so than anything is the tone of the film. Like, with Bad Santa, it worked because it was funny, but it almost kind of didn't feel real. Like, I wasn't worried that he was, like, storming around this world tormenting children. Here, the pace was so slow and deliberate, and he was approaching it as though it was, like, a drama and, like, letting his jokes breathe, and that was making it really hard for me to listen to those jokes without assuming that, like, this could really happen to a kid. Not that this really could, but, like, he torments children. Like, he ruins certain people's lives in this movie. Like, two kids at least that I could count off, the three kids at least. And then, like, a grown woman with a career that she's established, and because he's being selfish and just pursuing this dream for a reason that we don't even know what it is until the tail end of the movie. I mean, I can't really get on board with that. That's not right. And the fact that I couldn't detach myself from that, I think, points at a problem with the tone. I feel like if it was a much snappier pace and he just approached it in, like, you know, like a hyper-real world, I would have been okay with all of this. Because then it would have been, like, you know, kind of like Mean Girls, where obviously, like, I'm okay that she got hit by a bus because I know where this world exists and what kind of approach they're taking to it, and I wasn't like haunted by the idea that a poor high school girl got hit by a bus. Here, I'm genuinely thinking about, you know, the child that will go home and never talk to his parents ever again, or the little girl who's going to be afraid of maturing for the rest of her life. It just, I couldn't get behind that. But at the same time, I'm laughing at it. Like, I'm going to be honest. I laughed both times when those incidents happened, but then after the fact is when I'm like, oh, like, that's not cool, man. You can't do that. And then that kind of killed the fun of it.
I know what you mean. I didn't have as much of a problem as you did, but it did take me a while to settle into the tone. The thing that I had a bigger problem with is that the central mystery here is why he has entered the spelling bee, and without giving anything away, and it's weird because it's one of those movies where this information is withheld not for really any good reason other than that they have to make a dramatic reveal. I mean, it's like Catherine Hahn, who plays a journalist who is with Jason Bateman on the strip and is basically sponsoring him, she doesn't know, so I guess, like, you could argue that that's why it's not revealed until late in the film, but, like, Jason Bateman is the main character, and he knows, and there's no real reason to shroud it in so much mystery. I mean, there are characters in, like, the girl with the dragon tattoo that have clear motivations. And then because it's built up so much, when it finally comes, it can't help but be a little bit of like, oh, well, I mean, I guess that explains some things.
It's a bad reason, too. He ruined so much for that really selfish reason.
Well, I mean, it's established that he's a really selfish person, but I also kind of like, the other thing about that twist is when it's revealed, I'm like, I can see a version of this movie where they didn't have to, like, artificially keep it hidden, and it would have been, like, a really compelling movie, because it's actually pretty interesting. It's an interesting twist, it's just not interesting enough to justify keeping it hidden for so long.
It doesn't even serve Catherine Hahn's character very well. It kind of only gives her a reason to be there. Other than that, she's got, like, nothing to her, and they also cut off that storyline really fast towards the end. Like, even when he does reveal why he's doing this, she doesn't get anything out of it. She doesn't get her big story. Perhaps if that's what happened, then I'd be like, all right, you know, there's a little bit of a reason to that now, but no, he just ruins everyone's life and that's it.
Yeah, that happens a couple times. There's also a plot thread with, like, so his friend, who is played by Rowan Chand, I looked it up in between our conversation, his, like, little kid friend, this 10-year-old boy, they set it up in the movie that he has this, like, you know, kind of horrible relationship with his dad, and that's kind of one of the things that Jason Bateman initially bonds with him over, because it's hinted throughout that he had a really terrible childhood. But then that plot line also doesn't really go anywhere. Like, it's never really resolved why this kid has problems with his dad, or even really what his dad is like.
I put that in my review. That really bothered me in the end, because that kid was one of my favorite parts of this movie, and, I mean, I really did want to know. He lived happily ever after, like, to a respect.
Let's talk about the kid. That kid is amazing. He's so adorable, which
he
is,
he needs,
like,
more movies.
I don't like kids, but that kid was just, like, he's really funny. He's really, like,
I've, like, seen a string of really great child actors, because normally I'm the first person to be like, ew, I hate that kid, because it's, like, that typical cute kid that really just gets under your skin at some point. But I'll get to this when I talk about South by stuff. There's been, like, a lot of really great child actor performances lately that I'm very excited about, and this is definitely one of them.
Yeah, I really hope that the kid in this movie gets more work, because, I mean, like, Jason Bateman is a grown-up actor with, like, decades of acting experience, and then this little 10-year-old kid, I don't know what else he's been in before this, if anything, but it can't have been that much because he's, like, 10. You know, it manages to hold his own and even, like, steal the scene in a lot of movies. I was very impressed. And it's, like, it's not one of those performances that's just like, oh, isn't he cute? We'll give him a pass on everything because of that. Like, he actually does a good job of, you know, fleshing out this character and conveying who this character is and what he's thinking and everything. Like,
this part requires a lot more than jokes, too. Like, there's a couple scenes where this poor kid really has to emote and make it look like Jason Bateman's character is, like, taking something very important away from him, and he really sells it, and the two of them have a really great back and forth towards the tail end of the film that's really convincing. And actually, that's one thing I should praise about this movie, because I didn't see it going in that direction towards the end. I don't want to spoil anything, okay. But I did like the grand finale.
Yeah, that was one of the parts of the movie that worked. I didn't really care for the epilogue, because that also kind of just feels like it's out of nowhere.
It's also because the ending is so unsatisfying, so when you have an epilogue, it's like, real, just end it.
Yeah, I don't know if I want to say this movie is too simple or too complicated because, as we mentioned, it keeps bringing up things that it just then has like no intention of resolving. But at the same time, I'm like, but then do I want to see like a 2.5 hour comedy where they flesh out every single? Not really. So I don't know. I mean, like I said, I think he did a really good job for this being the first time he directed. Yeah.
It's all right. I'd probably say wait for VOD, and then when it comes on VOD, buy it on VOD because you will enjoy it.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. This is exactly the kind of thing that I would enjoy watching on like a Friday night with, you know, with some popcorn and
Hey.
Prosecco. But it's not something that I'm like, oh, you have to run to the theater and see it right now. So any other final thoughts, or should we move on to the next topic?
I say let's move on.
Okay. Oh, it's my turn again because Christy's not here. Haha, Christy. So the next
So
thing that we're
meanwhile, she's drinking like Bushmills and Guinness in Ireland right now.
I know. No offense to you, Perry, or any of our lovely listeners, but I would rather be drinking whiskey in Ireland with some handsome men. You
I
know,
think that's very
just throwing that out
reasonable.
there. Yeah. Anyway, so the next thing that we want to talk about is Veronica Mars, which, you know, even if you weren't a fan of the show and hadn't heard of the show, you probably have heard of by now because it famously earned $1 gazillion on Kickstarter. To make a sequel, what, like 7 years after the show went off the air, and it finally opened today, or yeah, this weekend, Pi Day, March 14th. Anyway, so in the movie, it's, you know, about roughly the same amount of time has passed, but in the timeline of the franchise that as it has in real life. So, you know, Veronica, who in the original show was like a teen detective stuck in this sunny but kind of seedy, or not seedy, but kind of, you know, troubled Los Angeles, or sorry, Southern California town. She now it's like 10 years later. She's on the verge of having like a career as a hotshot lawyer in New York City, but then she gets a phone call from her ex, and it turns out that his pop star girlfriend has been murdered, and he's the prime suspect. And he's all like, "I need your help, Veronica," which is something that he says like a gazillion times in the show. So she has to go back and try to prove that he's innocent, basically. She has to go back and be a detective again, even though she hasn't done it in 10 years. So, Perry, I know that you haven't seen the show, right?
No, the only time I see it now is when Lonnie, my sister, watches it on the Soap Network. Because it's on reruns all the time. And I'll sit and I'll watch every once in a while.
I didn't know that, but now I suddenly want to see if I have the
It's called
Soap
the
Network. I'd
Soap
like to
Network,
watch it
right?
again.
Is that what it's called?
I don't
Yeah.
know. I don't think I have that channel.
It's like all old school reruns and she watches it all the time.
Oh. Anyway, so I think one of the big questions is whether it's, well, there's a couple big questions. One is whether it satisfies fans, and the other is whether it's actually good enough to bring new people into the fold or to interest them. And on the first count, I think, I mean, as a fan, you know, full disclosure, I donated like about $10 to the Kickstarter, so, you know, I helped make it happen. As a fan, I thought that it was, you know, reasonably satisfying, not like the oh my god, you know, like that was everything that it ever needed to be, and now I can move on with my life and never think about Veronica Mars again. Not like that, but it's reasonably satisfying. It's everything you could hope for, I think. It has a lot of cameos. It has, you know, the two most important relationships from the show are highlighted here. That's one is with her dad, where they have like a really like lovely, sweet relationship. The other one is with her ex-boyfriend Logan, who is like the guy that's perfect for her and also terrible for her, and they can never really stay away from each other. You know, it's got like a fun mystery that manages to bring in all of these old characters that you're familiar with. So I mean, on that level, it works. I don't think that it will. I think that if you've never seen the show, you'll probably still find it a moderately entertaining mystery. I don't think that people who've never seen the show will be like, oh my god, I get it now. I'm on the Veronica Mars bandwagon and I want to, you know, donate $100 to their next Kickstarter or anything like that.
Does it like justify the Kickstarter campaign? Because really, it's the fans that funded it, so is it worth their what they donated?
I mean, I don't know what people donated, and I can't speak for all 90,000 of us or anything, but I think so. I mean, it, and if anything, I think that Rob Thomas, the director, who is also the creator of Veronica Mars, if anything, he might actually work too hard to please the Kickstarter fans. Like, there are certain, you know, there's a lot of cameos that are there just to please longtime fans. There are certain scenes that feel like they're shoehorned in just to please longtime fans. And that was one of those things where I was like, this is both, you know, that's both a good thing about it and a bad thing about it. On the one hand, I'm glad that he was able to deliver on these things that fans have been wanting to see for so long. On the other hand, it kind of felt like this might have been a better movie if he had just been able to take what he wanted from Veronica Mars without being beholden to all those longtime fans. I wrote a review of it, and in it I was saying that it's, you know, it's a pretty good epilogue, but it also turns out to be a pretty good reboot. So basically, it does an okay job, like, you know, it does a pretty good job wrapping up all the old storylines, but there are also, like, moments in it where you're just like, holy shit, this would actually be like a really good start of a whole other show that wasn't so beholden to, you know, all the old fans. So I don't know. So I guess basically I was a longtime fan. I thought that this was pretty satisfying, but not like the most amazing thing ever satisfying. I think it's, as someone who donated $10 to the Kickstarter, it was very much worth it for me. I don't know if someone who donated $10,000 will feel the same way.
That's a good point.
Sorry?
I said that's a good point.
Yeah, so, I mean, yeah, and I don't know if it will necessarily attract a new following, but I kind of hope it will, because even though didn't love this movie, it really made me wish that there was more coming. Without giving anything away, the ending kind of sets it up so that you could imagine how this could launch a whole new series of shows or movies.
Looks like I'm going to have to see it then.
Yeah, I think, this is another one where I think if you're not, like, a longtime fan, you can just watch it on VOD, especially because I think it's a day and date thing, so it's available now. It's, you don't have to wait to see it.
Really?
I think so.
I was not aware of that, but if that is the case, that would give me a very good reason to watch it.
I could be lying, but I think that it is a VOD day and date thing, so it's probably on there right now. And before we go, one more thing. It's a movie. To me, it still felt like a TV show. So if you're wondering if the change in medium made it more cinematic, I would say only a little bit. But anyway, that about wraps up my thoughts on Veronica Mars, and we should move to our last and, judging by Perry's face, most exciting topic, South by Southwest. I wasn't there because I'm not super lucky, but you were, so take it away.
I was very lucky because I had an absolute blast on this trip. I'm, like, running on very little sleep, but it was incredibly worth it. And I think I ate an entire box of Luna bars this week. There was not a time to sit down and have a normal meal, but I'm totally okay with that because I saw some awesome movies and I got to talk to some really great people. I figured I'd approach this by just talking about some of my favorites of the bunch, and I'll start with telling you my top three of the festival. And I'm kind of surprised, but Chef is in there, and so is a movie called Stage Fright, and I also am going with Silicon Valley, which is the new HBO show. So first for Chef, that was the opening night of the festival, and I had gone into it not hearing good things about it at all, and just like not being all that thrilled about it. I really thought that I was going to end up coming out having enjoyed Neighbors more than Chef, but it was very much the opposite. The movie stars Jon Favreau and is also directed by Jon Favreau, and he plays a chef, a really popular chef in Los Angeles who makes great meals and has a really great reputation, and then an infamous food critic comes over to his restaurant, and he wants to surprise him, kind of, by spicing up the menu, and the owner of the restaurant won't let him. He wants to, you know, make sure to keep pleasing the old clientele, so he makes him make the same meals, and this food critic calls him out on it. They start this whole social media war, and he basically ruins his reputation, can't get a new job, and then his last resort is starting a food truck, and that's what he does. And it is just like the definition of a feel-good movie. A lot of people are kind of picking on it because it is so clearly a metaphor for making a movie and then having it trashed and how that makes you feel when you've worked so hard on something.
I've heard a lot of people say it's not just a metaphor for that, but specifically for Jon Favreau's career, where he started out making, like, smaller things, and then Iron Man happened, and we're like, yay, and then Iron Man 2 happened, and we're like, oh, fuck. And then Cowboys, and, you know. So.
You could definitely make that connection, and it's very heavy-handed. I mean, you're blind if you don't see all of that. But at the same time, I'm totally cool with it, because even though he's relating it directly to his own experiences, I mean, just think about it. Everybody has something like that. Have you ever worked super hard for something and then had someone, you know, criticized you and ruined your dreams? Like, it's happened to everybody, and it's easy to relate to, and it's really motivating, even though, I mean, there really isn't, beyond that inciting incident, there really isn't a single conflict in the entire extent of the film, but at the same time, it's very motivating to see him power through it all and come out, you know, with a semblance of what he wanted to begin with, and it just makes you, it makes you feel really good. It's a fun, fun, well-edited piece with great music cues, and it's impossible not to enjoy. And speaking of great music, my other favorite of the festival, which I really can't believe, is a movie called Stage Fright. It was part of the Midnight lineup, and I saw this trailer before going to South By, and I destroyed it. I put it in my best worst movie trailers of the week piece at movies.com in the worst section, and I just tore it apart, saying that, like, this trailer proves that these two things, the horror and the music, just aren't going to work. They're not going to come together at all. And I was proven wrong big time. I went with a couple people to this midnight screening, and I will tell you, this might be one of the most fun times I had in the theater all week. Some elements of it don't work. The story and the characters in particular, you know, they're pretty cliche and they're not very fleshed out, but just the fun of seeing that kind of cliche horror scenario play out with a really creative selection of music is just so much freaking fun. And it's like cheesy show tune type music, and then there's a heavy metal component, and they use that joke over and over, and you would think you would get tired of it, and it's just so funny.
Can you say a little bit more about the plot?
Okay, that's probably a good idea. So the plot centers on this one girl, and she has a mother who was once a famous Broadway star. The mother is killed during one of her performances. Girl grows up, she goes off to, like, singing and performing camp, but she's not there as a camper. She's working as, like, the cook or the lunchroom lady. And they put on the same play that the mother got killed doing. And now she's like, oh, I want to, you know, honor my mother and get her role. And sure enough, she gets it. And then as they're putting on this play, one by one, everyone gets kind of killed off. It sounds very familiar, except for the fact that it's a play, it has a musical component, it is like what you've seen before, but the two come together so well, and the material is so freaking funny, it's impossible not to like this. And I will say, stay through the credits, there's a great song that plays through the end of the film that you want to hear. So, next up, I'm going to hit Silicon Valley, which they showed two episodes at South By, and both of them played exceptionally well. In case you don't know anything about this one, it's basically about this group of up-and-comers, sort of, in Silicon Valley. There's this one guy who, he hit it big and sold, you know, he's like a dot-com millionaire, and he's basically riding on the money he made from that by spending it on a house, and then he lets other guys who are first coming to Silicon Valley stay with him. And the deal is he puts a roof over their head and then he gets 10% of whatever they're developing. So one guy who works for some like big name company as like a low kind of guy, a low ranking kind of guy, he works at this place called Hooli, and everybody there is kind of, you know, giving him a hard time because he's just working there and he's doing fine, but he'll never make anything of himself and he's socially awkward and he's a geek and all that. But it turns out what he's developing at this incubator, that's what they call the house, it's got the potential to spawn a multi-billion dollar company, and that's what the show is basically about, with him, you know, getting an offer for it and then trying to build this company with his friends while trying to, you know, respect his friendships, do it the right way, make sure it's lucrative and all of that, and how he's got to balance everything out. I mean, based on that description, it sounds so serious, but it's not. This is a very comedic approach to it. If you know anything about the Silicon Valley culture, it's absolutely hilarious. There's loads of tiny details that you're going to find really funny. But at the same time, even if you're not tech savvy, the whole, like, the geek culture more so is broad enough that it'll pull you in. You'll get it. These characters are established well enough that you can totally get on board with them, even though you're not entirely sure what they're saying, especially when it comes to the main character who often describes what this algorithm is that he made that could get him this major company. Some of the details could go over your head, but the general purpose is easy to decipher, so you'll be on board with that.
I've been on board since, I mean, it's the new comedy by Mike Judge, who created, Beavis and Butthead and King of the Hill and Office Space. So I've been on board pretty much since I heard that he was doing this. I think that already kind of sells itself, and it's got a pretty good cast too, right?
It's got a great cast. I don't think there really isn't a single bad performance in this. And the first two episodes, which is what we saw, only focus on, like, I want to say, like two or three characters really get built up to, like, a certain degree. But the rest of them kind of fade to the background. But even the ones that fade into the background, like, make an impression. They at least prove in those first two episodes why they're in this show and why we need them. And that was very, very satisfying. I think you're going to like it. I think if you're looking forward to the show and this is something that interests you, you're going to be very, very satisfied.
What kind of humor is it? Is it like, for example, like, Girls is an HBO comedy, but that's the one kind of humor, and, you know, King of the Hill and Beavis and Butthead are other kinds of humor?
It's not Beavis and Butthead. I'd say it's a little more heightened than Girls. There's something, like, the world still feels real, but there is, like, a hyper-reality feel towards it, where, like, just the jokes are so snappy, there really isn't, like, there isn't a second to breathe in between jokes either. It's very quick. The whole episode plays very quick. It's a 30-minute episode, and they fly by so fast. But every joke in it is pretty damn funny. And all the guys that lead this show, they've got, like, spot-on timing, especially T.J. Miller. If you've ever seen him in anything, his character has, like, the potential to be really annoying just because he's so loud and, you know, he gives off, like, a dumber impression than some of the other ones. But he works that dialogue so well that you kind of like his character to a degree.
Nice. I'm just surprised it took someone this long to try to make a movie about Silicon Valley culture, honestly.
TV show.
TV show. Yeah.
Well, they did it, and they did it right, thankfully.
So I want to ask you about something that you mentioned near the beginning of the show, which is child actors. And how you've been seeing so many good ones. I know Chef has one. How was that one?
Chef has one. He's great. It's like, he's one of those kids in that movie where he's super mature, where he almost, like, talks down to his father, who's Jon Favreau, in a way. And I really appreciated that. And I also liked how they wove that character into the narrative. He's not just like, the storyline isn't just that Jon Favreau has to make it so that he has a good relationship with this kid because he's worked so hard all these years and he's neglected his son. It's not just about mending that. This kid has, like, a pivotal, he's very much part of the rise of the food truck. The food truck would never be what it is unless he was part of it. And I really appreciated that they gave a kid such an important role like that. But in the other movies, the one that sticks out on the top of my head right now is the movie Breakpoint, the tennis movie with Jeremy Sisto. That has a kid in it who is literally in it so he could be the butt of every joke. But the kid that's playing the kid, God, I think his name is like Joshua Rush or something. He's one of the kids from Parental Guidance. But he is so spot on. He nails every single joke. I mean, like, laugh out loud worthy, too. Like, whenever he is either made fun of or says something silly, like, I guess you're kind of laughing at his expense, but it's still so pleasing. It's funny. He has great stuff in this. Oh, and then the other one that I was really into was Space Station 76. I did not like that movie very much. I thought it was an interesting concept. It basically shows what would happen if, like, some space travel happened, but in the style of the 70s, so it's basically like the Brady Bunch in space, and that's kind of what I wished it was. I wish it was a TV show, like the Brady Bunch in space. I would watch that because what the movie basically functions as is a pilot where it introduces this world and all the characters and then just doesn't take anybody anywhere. But the best part about that movie, I'm serious when I say this too, the best part about that movie is one character whose name is Sunshine, and she's the little girl in the movie. And this girl, not only is her material hilarious, but there's a scene in this movie where a pet dies, and this poor girl is crying, and I believed it. Like, she is just so genuine and natural, and she was just such a fresh, like a breath of fresh air throughout this entire thing, because the large majority of the characters in that movie are like, you know, cookie cutter versions of what you would expect, like typical stereotypes. With her, you could actually look in her face and see the wheels turning in her head and know that she's thinking and judging everyone and really trying to figure out how to get what she wants, and I really appreciated that. I think that sums up the kids of South by Southwest.
Got it. Was there anything that you were particularly... Well, you mentioned one thing you were pleasantly surprised by. Were there any others like that or anything you were, you know, disappointed by that you had been looking forward to?
I think the biggest disappointment for me was probably Open Windows, the one with Elijah Wood and Sasha Grey. The big thing about that movie is
what's the premise?
It literally takes place on a laptop screen, the whole movie. And what it is Elijah Wood is a big fan. I forget her name now. I'll have to look it up. But he's a big fan of some famous actress. And he runs a fan site, and he gets an email saying he wins a contest to go visit her and have dinner with her. He gets there, and then while he's on his computer, like, doing whatever, he gets a message from someone saying that the dinner was canceled, and it was canceled because she's a snobby bitch, and she just felt like canceling it. And so he's trying to rile him up, basically, and then he gives him all these tools to, like, spy on her. Like, he taps into her cell phone and he gives him a camera to look out the window and spy on her. And basically this whole scenario is supposed to be taking on a laptop screen. You're watching Elijah Wood because he's having a Skype conversation or like a Google Hangout type conversation with this other person that's giving him instructions. Then on top of that, you're looking at the video camera view looking out his window. You see Sasha Grey's video camera on her iPhone. You see, I don't want to spoil anything, but basically the whole narrative comes together through anything that's happening on the screen. It never leaves the screen. And I thought that was a really cool idea. It's really ambitious. And no matter how much I don't like this movie, I really do respect the filmmakers for trying to make it happen. And it's also very evident that they did try to plan it out very clearly. And I think it was one of the best efforts that they could have made. It doesn't come together. And I think it's mostly because that kind of technique is probably hard enough for the large majority of people to adjust to begin with. And then they pack it with one of the most convoluted narratives I've ever experienced in my life. There are so many freaking twists. And, like, you think one character is one way, but then he's not. He's the other way. And that happens so many times over. It ends up being, like, where in the beginning of the movie, you say to yourself, why is this character doing this? And you want your answer. And the film eventually gives you an answer, but it gives you an answer so much further down the line that you completely forget what your question was to begin with. So nothing has any weight whatsoever. It's a failed attempt at doing this, but I think this could be kind of like found footage 2.0, where there's a lot of potential in it. They just don't do it very well. So that was probably my biggest disappointment of the festival.
I feel like it says something about what a good time you had, that your biggest disappointment is something you still have a lot of, you know, nice things to say about. I mean, I know you said it didn't come together, but you're like, well, at least it was ambitious and whatnot. Maybe someone will do it better next time.
I'd like to hope so. That's something I strive to do during South By, especially, too, because there's such great vibes there. And even though, you know, there's always bad films, but nobody means to make a bad film. And there's always there really is always something good in every film, no matter how poorly made it is. And just, I like to celebrate that. And that film deserves it. That's not just me being like, oh, let's just be nice to everybody. Really, that was an ambitious project, and they tried to do it. And that deserves credit.
I'll take an ambitious, heartfelt mess over, like, one of those soulless, empty, you know, clearly everyone here, the only motivating factor is money kind of films anyway.
And that is something I would jump all over if I caught one that did it. But this is a film festival with a lot of really passionate, inspired filmmakers, and I didn't see a single thing that fit that description.
Great.
You want to touch on Godzilla really quick?
No. Do you?
Well, it was a pretty cool way to end the festival. We got to see a whole sequence from the movie.
Oh, right. Sorry. Well, I didn't see it, like, so what?
Did you read any of the write-ups about the footage?
No, sorry.
Oh my god. Well, then I'm even more excited to tell you about it.
Yes, please do.
Oh my god, we're so way over. That's why you said that. All right, really quick. So Gareth Edwards showed up at South by. We all watched the 1954 Godzilla, and then he comes on stage and introduced a sequence of the film, and it's basically the sequence where the water recedes and Godzilla comes in and a wave comes over and, like, people are running and the boats are rocking. But one of my favorite things in this entire piece is that Aaron Taylor-Johnson's character is on, like, an airport tram, and you see him in the beginning and then you see him later on after the wave comes in and you know something's coming, and there's another kaiju that attacks his train, and it's like a bug-looking thing. It's got four legs and, like, little T-Rex claws, and its face looks like almost exactly like the monster from Cloverfield. But the more exciting thing about this monster is that at first you think this monster is, like, the biggest thing in the world, and he's just going to swallow up that train whole. But then you see this monster in a really wide shot, and it's, like, this big. I'm trying to, like, do it to scale right now. He's this big, and then you see Godzilla's legs step into frame, and it's, like this big. And it, like, dwarfs this little... It was a very exhilarating feeling. And then the last shot in the piece was on that leg, panning up for a full body shot of Godzilla. Ooh. And you're just like, shit. This guy did it right. This could be good. I'm feeling very good about that movie. I just wanted to say that.
Nice. I wish that I had seen that now, even though I hadn't even read any of the write-ups beforehand. Sorry.
Well, we have it to look forward to. It comes out in like 2 months, so soon enough.
Is it really that soon? I thought it came out later.
Isn't it May?
I don't know now. I feel like I should look it up.
I might be confusing it with Chef and Neighbors. I know Chef is May 9, and I think Neighbors is May 9, too.
Oh, Godzilla is May 16, so you were very close. You're right, it comes out in, like, 2 months.
I am quite excited.
Nice.
All right, so now that I blew way past our out time, that's all we have for you this week. But if you enjoyed the show, be sure to keep following along at popcornprosecco.com. Catch us on Twitter at popcornprosecco, and also subscribe to our YouTube channel, Popcorn Prosecco. Angie, where can everyone find you on the web?
I write for /film.com, and you can find me on Twitter at AJHAN.
And you can catch me all over the place, but if you want to find all of my work in one handy-dandy spot, littlemisscritical.com, and also on Twitter, my handle is P. Nemiroff. Thank you so much for watching. We'll see you next time.
Bye. I wanna be a hero when I grow up. When I grow up.